touched. You say that I'm too so much of what you say is true. I'll never find someone quite like you again.
The Consequences of Falling, Part 3. Written and read by Feige. Dean scrabbles around for the condom and is about to open it when Castiel's hand closes on his. He looks up. I don't want that, says Castiel, frowning. I want to feel you, all of you, in me. Gah, says Dean, all smooth and articulate-like. It's just... He runs several possible conversations very quickly through his mind and concludes that they are all a waste of time that could be much better spent getting on with the actual sex having. He knows that he is clean, and he's not exactly worrying about catching angel cooties here. Yeah, okay, cool. He tears open the little packet of lube and starts to rub himself, and then has to stop and close his eyes, and press down quite hard until he isn't in immediate danger of coming in his own hand, because Castiel is watching him. And that's just... Really, there should be laws against that. He takes several long, deep breaths, and then opens his eyes and turns his attention to anointing Castiel with a warm gloop, slicking it over the cleft of his buttocks and into the tight little hole, and watching the way Castiel's belly flexes with each hiss of indrawn breath. Distracted, Dean slides his fingers curiously up the length of Castiel's penis, feeling the weight and the width of it. He lowers his mouth to it and licks a stripe up the underside and then slides the crown as far into his mouth as he can and tries sucking and licking at the same time. Saliva leaks out of the sides of his mouth and, wow, this is about as different from going down on a girl as it could be, really, but it's kind of fascinating trying to replicate the things he knows he enjoys himself. He's starting to feel a renewed appreciation and respect for all the girls who have ever gone down on him, and he wonders whether he can manage to deep throat. Probably not, though. And vomiting on a guy's penis whilst you're trying to relieve him of his virginity is really supremely uncool. So he just sticks to licking and sucking and teasing and generally tries to see how much Castiel can take. Not very much, as it turns out. Now, says Castiel again, his voice sounding distinctly tattered. Now, please do it. Fuck me. I want you to. And there's an offer you can't refuse. Dean sits back and slides two slick fingers cautiously inside Castiel. Now, says Castiel. And Dean bites his lip and tries very hard not to think about abandoning all his preparation and just forcing his way in, just having him and letting it hurt, making him take it. He reminds himself that it's the guy's first time, for fuck's sakes, and Dean, I'm not going to break, and if you don't fuck me right now, I may have to punch you in the face. Says Castiel, with convincing sincerity. Oh, what the hell? Your wish is my command, says Dean, and does. Oh, God. And there aren't words to express just how much he loves the sounds that Castiel makes now, or that anguished, naked expression on his face as he gasps. He's hot and tight and wet and utterly, utterly perfect. And he's still watching Dean through slitted eyes like Dean knows the answer to all the secrets of the universe. More, he gasps after a moment, sounding broken, but glad of it. So Dean kisses him, once, fast and messy, and then wraps his hand around Castiel's dick and takes him at his word and just goes for it. Hard and fast, sloppy and unsubtle, deep, urgent, wild and untender. It's like a race or a fight. Like a quick-fire conversation, like running for your life, and Dean never, ever wants to lose this feeling of being held safe and tight and warm, of feeling the angel gradually coming apart and shattering underneath him, breath coming in wild gasps and moans as his blunt nails rake Dean's back and his head is flung back on the pillow, bouncing, helpless, lost, coming. Dean's. Dean jerks him off, feeling the sticky spurts spatter both of them, and watching Castiel's blissed out, agonized face like it's the most important thing in the whole world, and he quickens his thrusts. And he's kind of embarrassed at the fact that he's lasting about as long as a 15-year-old here, but at least he's doing better than Castiel. Although, Jesus, Castiel, right now, has got to be about the most devastatingly gorgeous thing he's ever seen. Love you, Dean gasps, meaning it so much it almost hurts to say it, and then that's it. White out. And for a moment he just hangs there, in the whirling silence of his own head, and knows nothing, not his name, not his life, not his hopes or fears, or a single damn thing. He just is. A few interminable moments later, he collapses on Castiel's sticky chest, panting, and feeling like he's just won something amazing and unlikely. And for a while they just lie there like that, until it crosses his mind that he's probably crushing the guy, and that this is not particularly polite, so he rolls over to the side and watches Castiel's face for a while, wondering what the hell is going on in his head. Ruby thinks that this is why I fell, says Castiel after some time. And okay, well, didn't see that one coming. But in this she is mistaken. He rolls over onto his side and looks at Dean earnestly, like it matters to him more than anything that Dean understand him. Dean, who is frankly not at his most intellectual or alert after sex, forces himself to concentrate. Hang on. Ruby thinks you fell because you had the hots for me. That is correct. Dean stares at him. But you didn't, did you? No. Castiel looks genuinely distressed. So much for afterglow. No, Dean, this is... I enjoyed this very much indeed. He makes it sound like a fucking thank you letter or something, and Dean would be put out if it weren't Castiel talking. It's not like the guy has had lots of chances to polish his pillow talk skills. This was by far the most enjoyable experience I have had as a human, and I would like to do it again, often, with you. But this is not why I fell. Dean chews this over and then grins. So, what you're saying is, you don't just love me for my undeniably fine ass and perky nipples and general status as total king of hottitude. You love me for my personality, right? Castiel considers this, and his earnest frown gradually gives way to a reluctant smile. Yes, it was agape, or caritas, before it was eros. I'm going to assume that means the same thing I just said, says Dean, nodding to himself. And Castiel leans closer and kisses him with a fierceness as unexpected as it is sweet. I love you for yourself, Dean Winchester. Not for what you can do for me. Not for these fleeting pleasures of the flesh, delicious though they be, but because you are full worthy to be loved. Oh, says Dean, suddenly tongue-tied. Well, okay then. And I am not going to leave. Adds Castiel, for all the world as if he can still read Dean's mind. Dean doesn't trust himself to answer that one, but luckily Castiel does not seem to expect an answer, and is content to simply hold him. And they should undoubtedly clean up and get dressed any minute now, because God knows when Sam will get back. But for the moment, Dean really can't bring himself to leave the circle of Castiel's arms. At the sound of the door opening, a rush of pure, petrified adrenaline has Dean sitting bolt upright in bed, looking guiltier than a cop next to an empty donut box. And hello, nudity, and hello, incriminatingly naked angel blinking sleepily awake at his side and looking like the poster boy for debauchery. And it doesn't even cross Dean's mind to worry that it might be Uriel at the door, or one of Alistair's demonic buddies, because all he can think as he reaches one hand wildly down to yank the sheets up high enough to cover their thighs is, Oh God, Sammy! Oh God, Sammy! Oh God, Sammy! And yes, of course it's Sammy, standing on the threshold with the key in one hand, the stupid big fob with a motel's logo on it swinging back and forth as he freezes in place and just stares. It lasts a moment, but seems to take at least a year, while Sam's smile slides away into a wordless, Oh! And his eyebrows shoot up into his bangs, and he just gapes into the room like a cartoon character who's just been hit with a baseball bat. Dean scrabbles around for the words that will distract and camouflage and charm and just plain lie the evidence out from under Sam's nose, but he comes up empty. Crap. A heartbeat later, Ruby appears at Sam's shoulder, just to complete Dean's utter mortification, and she makes a choking noise that sounds suspiciously like laughter. "Okay, awkward. I'm guessing you probably aren't ready to join us for brunch just yet, then," she says, looking from Castiel to Dean and then back again in a way that makes Dean feel like a freaking centrefold and has him clutching the sheets defensively and trying to tug them higher. Oh, man, what I wouldn't give for a camera right now. She glances up at Sam, her mouth twitching, and then grabs him by the belt loop of his jeans and gives a tug. "We'll be in the IHOP on the corner, boys, if you feel like loading up on carbs and coffee before we hit the road." Her grin widens. "Looks to me like you've maybe burned off a few calories." "Shut up," says Dean, red-faced and scowling and cornered, damn it, and quite unable to look away from Sam. "Fuck, busted, busted, busted." "Come on, Sam," says Ruby. And this time she hooks an arm around his waist and steers him away. And he's still not said a damn thing. And then the door is closing behind them, and Dean is still sitting there, staring at the door, with his heart trying to fight its way out of his chest. "Shit," he says at last, and then realizes belatedly that he's still holding Castiel's hand, has been holding it all this while, and squeezing it hard enough to break something, and looks across at Castiel's face to find the angel, his angel, is watching him intently. And the complicated keeps right on coming, damn it. Dean kind of wants to be mad with Castiel because this is his goddamn fault, making Dean look like some kind of, like, really, if it hadn't been for the angel being all... It's not like Dean goes around sucking off bikers or dressing up in ladies' underwear or anything, for fuck's sakes. He's not going to be tossing out all his albums and starting listening to Judy Garland and talking about musical theatre anytime soon. He's a guy, a guy's guy, a hunting, shooting, ass-kicking kind of guy who knows just how to make an engine purr as sweet and smooth as honey, and knows how to make a pretty girl purr even sweeter. He isn't some kind of... Or at least... It's not like... Oh, crap. Okay, so, yeah, maybe it is like that. Kind of. And either Sam is going to be all liberal understanding college boy about this, which will make Dean want to smack him in the face with a plank of wood, or else he's going to be mocking Dean for the rest of his life. Or else... Worst of all, he's not going to say a damn thing. He's just going to freak out and get all stiff-necked and weird and embarrassed and, God, ashamed. And honestly, Dean doesn't know how he could stand that. Oh, he hates being seen. Being known. Dean Winchester has made a whole way of life built on hiding who he really is, one way or another. And now, oh, shit. Shit, shit, shit. "Are you ashamed of me?" asks Castiel in a clear voice, cutting through Dean's freakout like a bucket of ice water. "Do you regret what we did?" Oh, and that's... Damn. "No," says Dean firmly, and he realises with some surprise that this is absolutely true. He looks at Castiel's solemn expression, the Spock quizzical tilt of his head, and smiles in spite of everything. Then he pushes himself up and on and over, straddling Castiel's waist and leaning into him, one hand buried in the pillow on either side of the guy's head, and he lowers himself down, slowly, looking into Castiel's eyes the whole time, and then does his damnedest to kiss the certainty back into him. "You're the best thing that's ever happened to me," Dean says, gruffly, a little later, just to be clear. And, damn, he said that before, but it's always been a line. It's kind of shocking to mean it so sincerely. To mean not just, let's fuck, but rather, you saved my life. You saved Sam's life. You saw what I had become in hell, and you still pulled me back to earth. You let them rip you out of heaven for me. You're insanely hot, and you look at me like I'm something amazing. You give me hope. I fucking love you. And he's not going to come out and say all that because, hello, not turning into a chick here, but Dean is just now starting to realise how thoroughly fucked he is. And not just in the obvious way, because this is better, or maybe worse, than being with Cassie. This is someone he just cannot stand lying to. Someone he can't bear the idea of disappointing. Someone he needs to keep right here with him, just like he needs Sam, like he needed Dad. It is, frankly, scary as hell and massively inconvenient, and Dean's experiences to date have pretty firmly suggested that for a Winchester guy, falling in love with anybody, really in love with them, is straight from the bumper book of breathtakingly bad ideas. But even so, feeling Castiel underneath him, and watching that new minted smile curving his human mouth, is filling Dean right up to the brim with pure, astonished delight, and a sense of wild optimism like nothing he's felt for far too long. Come what may, he can't regret this. It's just too fucking awesome. It makes things awkward for you, though, says Castiel, looking up at him with that wide-eyed, alien, fresh from the flying saucer curiosity. And Dean sighs, because he's not wrong.
Well, I gotta admit, this would have been a bit less complicated if you'd had the common sense to possess a hot little waitress from Hooters, because this... He nods at the two of them with a rueful expression. This isn't really Sam, something Sam ever needed to know about me, ever. But what the hell, we'll deal.
He drops a kiss on the corner of Castiel's mouth.
It's cool.
He traces the shape of Castiel's lower lip with the pad of his thumb, conscious that he started to get hard again against Castiel's flat belly, and wondering if there's time to do something about that. And thinking also that they're both pretty gross and in need of a shower, and that Castiel likes showers. And that the shower stall in this place is big enough for two.
Huh. To be honest, I like you like this, Dean says, softly, admitting it to himself as much as to Castiel. You're just so... The holy tax accountant thing suits you is all. I'm glad you didn't possess a waitress.
I am glad too, says Castiel, and his smile warms Dean like sunshine after a storm. Sam is just going to have to damn well suck it up and deal. Castiel seems sublimely unconcerned, but when they walk into the restaurant, Dean is jittery as hell and acutely conscious of the fact that they're together. Surely it must be obvious to all these people busy shoveling four cloves of pancakes down their faces that Dean and Castiel are... that they've just... Oh, crap. He feels like he's carrying around a sign that reads, actually, kinda gay, or something. Maybe he's just gay for angels. But that wouldn't explain Jack Nicholson, or Bruce Lee, so maybe not. Dean takes a deep breath and forces himself to chill. They can totally pass as normal. He's been walking into diners with Dad or Sam or both for his whole life. No reason anyone should suddenly imagine that Castiel, in his unangelic jeans and one of Dean's t-shirts, is anything but a friend. A perfectly normal, perfectly heterosexual friend, a guy. He glances at Castiel just to be sure that he hasn't magically turned into RuPaul whilst Dean wasn't looking. And the sight of him, so small and warm and human, with three or four hickeys dark as rose petals blooming on the pale skin of his throat, with his damp hair falling into his eyes now that his body doesn't just magically default back to its factory settings of bedhead and unmarked skin and suit and tie. The sheer sweetness of the guy sends an unexpected rush of tenderness shooting through Dean's whole body. And it crosses his mind that life is short, and that the future looks pretty fucking bleak by anybody's standards, and that Castiel is here and now, human and his. And all of a sudden, Dean finds himself grabbing the guy by the ears, yanking him close, hooking one hand around the nape of his neck and cupping the back of his skull in place while he kisses the startled face off him, in front of all these people. He can feel Castiel's pulse against his own, can feel the bones under his skin, and knows precisely how fragile they are. And Dean kisses him, and kisses him, and kisses him some more, just because he can. When they come up for air, Castiel is pink-cheeked, and flustered, and glowing like a freaking light bulb. And then Dean grabs him by the hand, and glares around at everyone in the whole damn world, and then leads Castiel over to Sam's table. "Morning," he says, calmly, sliding into the empty side of the booth and pulling Castiel along with him. And then he just looks at Ruby and Sam and dares them to comment. Sam looks like he may have just inhaled half a pancake, but Ruby looks almost smug. She waggles her eyebrows at Castiel. "I so called this," she says, stabbing a piece of bacon with her fork and raising it to her lips. "French fries? Tequila. Do I know about the fun parts of this mortal coil, or what?" Castiel, already distinctly pink, blushes even harder. "This is not why I fell," he says seriously, frowning across the booth. Ruby shrugs. "Okay,
But you've got to admit, it's definitely a perk. Hello, sitting right here, protests Dean, momentarily distracted from worrying about Sam. And I'm not an it or a perk. Oh, I don't know, says Ruby, dropping her eyes to his chest and wetting her lips. From what I saw, parts of you are pretty damn perky. She grins. But I'll grant that you're not an it, Dean. There is no time for the witty and withering comeback that Dean is sure he was on the brink of coming up with, because the waitress is suddenly there, with a dazzling smile, to take their orders. After she leaves, Dean takes his courage in his hands and looks over at his brother. So, there's something you want to say? He asks, doing his damnedest to keep his game face in place and not sound like he's begging for anything. And Sam looks at him with that little frown crumpling his brow, like he's trying to puzzle out the answer to the meaning of life or something, and then smiles. And maybe it's not Sam's best ever smile, but it's a smile. No, says Sam, glancing from Dean to Castiel and then back. His mouth twitches. And that's a real smile. Okay, it's a bratty, you got caught looking like a jackass, little brother grin, the kind that usually drives Dean insane, makes him start thinking about replacing Sam's toothpaste with hair gel, but it's real, and not disgusted or totally freaked out. And that's plenty to be going on with. Cool, he says, and squeezes Castiel's hand under the table. Sure, Dean can understand why Sam might want to travel with Ruby in the banana mobile, rather than leave her trailing them alone while he deals with having Dean's new friend sitting in the back seat of the Impala like a stray puppy or something. But he doesn't have to like it. Sam's supposed to be in here with him, not in that ridiculous little convertible half a mile back, with his possibly evil squeeze. And this is just the thin end of the wedge, he realises, because he's not about to wave Castiel off into the sunset any time soon, and that means that, like it or not, he's making their two into a three. Maybe even a four, which is, wow, really all kinds of weird and wrong. And sure, okay, yeah, there were always a three back when it was the two of them and Dad on the road, but that was a whole different ball game. And yeah, the Dean's always had girls aplenty, but he's never thought about bringing any of them along on the road. Not even Cassie. So this, what they're doing now? Yeah, it's weird. And it's making him antsy, thinking about Sammy being out of his reach, being left to Ruby's tender mercies. Well, sure, she's not done anything to hurt him so far. But Dean still doesn't trust her as far as he could throw the Impala. Demon. Mind you, he's not at all sure that Sam trusts her entirely, but he trusts her a damn sight more than Dean does, and that's a fact. I do not trust Ruby, says Castiel. And again, that's a little bit too much like the mind-reading shtick he had as an angel for Dean's comfort. He shoots a quick look over at Castiel's face and sees his brow furrowing in thought. He has been sitting very quietly at Dean's side as the miles slide by, looking out through the window like some kind of tourist, watching the street signs and the factories, the station wagons and 7-Elevens, watching women pushing strollers and bums sprawling on benches. Dean still doesn't know what the guy makes of mortality, or where this particular announcement came from. Well, that makes two of us, says Dean grimly. She has been unexpectedly generous, Castiel adds slowly, and I confess I find myself beginning to like her. I would like to trust her, and to believe that it is possible for a soul to claw its own way to redemption, that she can still crave forgiveness and want to do good for its own sake, that she truly wishes to help you both. But I cannot forget her nature. I have known too many demons, and they are wily and treacherous to the very core. I am not comfortable with how intimate she has become with your brother Sam. Hey, you're preaching to the choir here. But I gotta give her props. She's not let us down yet. Which is successfully winning your trust. Point. She did save your ass, says Dean, in spite of himself. And how has he come to be playing literal devil's advocate in this conversation? Well, that's all kinds of wrong right there. She did, agrees Castiel. He bows his head. I do deeply regret leaving the motel room when I heard her drive away. It was through me that she regained your trust. He bites his lip, and the expression on his face when he looks up is painful. I had no intention of ever seeking you out, Dean. Which, huh. Dean's not sure how to take that. He feels kind of hurt, actually, or offended. Something. Because he's sitting right here with a guy. He's let his brother find him in bed with a guy, which is pretty damn huge, thank you very much. And right now, Sammy is riding along in someone else's car rather than in the Impala where he belongs. All because Dean's been making space in his life for Castiel. And Castiel would have been good with just never even fucking seeing him again? Oh, nice. Real nice. I wanted to keep you safe, says Castiel, staring down at his hands. And in that, I fear I have not succeeded. He glances up again and his face reddens. And worse, I cannot regret it. I am too selfishly glad to be here with you, Dean Winchester, even though it may increase your peril. Oh. Oh. Dean swallows. Okay, then. Me too, he says awkwardly, without looking at Castiel. We still have not spoken about the host of heaven, says Castiel. Dean glances at him again and finds his attention snagged by the sight of Castiel's tongue darting out to wet his lips. His mouth, Dean happens to know, still tastes like blueberries and maple syrup. It's a slightly distracting thought, but not quite enough to take his mind off the subject at hand. Not a lot to say, says Dean shortly, because he's really been enjoying not dwelling on the thought that God himself is pissed with the Winchesters. It makes him feel crazy and helpless and mad, and there isn't a damn thing he can do about it. So, on the whole, he'd rather stick with denial. Denial works just great. Until somebody comes up with an actual plan. Or until the shit truly hits the fan, whichever comes first. I have given this much thought over the time I have been human, says Castiel, frowning down at his hands. I find that in this form the way I think is different. New possibilities open up. And I have been wondering whether it truly was the will of God. Dean blinks and looks away from the empty road before them. Come again. He wanted your salvation, Dean. He sent me into hell for a reason. I cannot understand why he would choose now to abandon you. Both of you. And I have wondered whether, perhaps, you know, God does not speak directly to us. He does not show us his face. We, they, have to rely on the word of four angels whom God has found worthy to be his go-betweens. But I have been wondering if it is possible that perhaps they may take too much upon themselves.
You mean, you think some celestial middle management guys have been making up their own office memos?
Castiel cocks his head a little, considering this assessment. I think it might be possible. Dean feels an unexpected little stab of hope.
There any way we can find out? Ask for a retrial or something?
Castiel frowns. I think it would be most unwise to seek out any emissaries of heaven at this time. Dean pulls a face.
Just because we're topping heaven's most wanted list, you mean?
Well, yes, Dean.
Yeah, I guess.
But, oh shit. How can we find out if, you know, the big guy is really on our side? Is there someone else we can go to? Some kind of, I don't know, a prophet or something? Or the Pope? Somebody? I cannot think of anyone, confesses Castiel, and his shoulders slump a little. In truth, I am surprised that we are somehow still alive.
Thanks for that, Pollyanna.
Castiel looks apologetic but doesn't volunteer any cheerful comebacks. The atmosphere in the car is becoming decidedly gloomy. Dean swallows. Denial, clearly the way forward.
So, since you're kind of new down here, I guess it's time you started to learn a little bit more about human culture.
Castiel accepts the change of subject with a nod, but his mouth remains a small, worried line. Dean decides to ignore it.
So, we're going to give you a little crash course in the arts.
The arts, repeats Castiel, a little dubiously.
Dean slides a tape into the tape deck and cranks it up to 11, then turns to beam at the angel as the first notes fill the car. Oh, yes, my friend. The aunts. The evening sky is a muddy violet smeared with crimson, the setting sun just a sliver of gold brushing the horizon when Dean pulls into the parking lot of a likely-looking motel and thumbs Sam's number on his speed dial. I'm at a motel on your left called, Camelot, apparently. See you in a minute, says Dean, keeping his voice soft so as not to wake Castiel. It feels odd as hell not to have Sam here with him, and they're going to have a talk about that sometime very soon, get things straightened out, because this is definitely not right. He switches off the cell phone and just sits there for a moment, enjoying the quiet and watching Castiel sleep. He looks very young and very defenseless, and not even a little bit supernatural. And Dean is tempted to lean over and kiss him awake, just because he knows he can. Because Castiel is sitting there with his head slumped onto one shoulder, his hair innocent of the customary mousse or wax or whatever the hell Castiel's vessel had been using to create that whole cool and messy and fuckable look when he was originally possessed, is now falling unstylishly over his brow, and his mouth is all soft and sweet and tempting. And right there. It's like looking at some fantastic present just waiting to be unwrapped, some warm and complex piece of machinery with no instruction manual enclosed. One that Dean is going to have to learn by touch and taste and trial and error. It makes Dean feel like it's his birthday and Christmas, all rolled into one. And he knows he's probably grinning like a dork, but he can't help it. He's got his very own angel to play with. And even if they're all going to hell in a handbasket, this is still just all kinds of awesome and unexpected. They have burned rubber, put as many miles as they could between them and L.A. They've all got hex bags about their person, as well as several scattered in each car. They should be well and truly off the radar, but Dean isn't going to get all cocky about it. He has learned, to his cost, that whatever can go wrong generally will go wrong. He has no plan yet for saving Sam's bacon, and he's worried that by letting Castiel in, he's pushing Sam closer to Ruby, and he's not at all sanguine about that, not one bit. But he can't stand the thought of pushing Castiel away, either. And speak of the devil, here she comes, in that curvaceous, crayon-bright punchline of a car. Dean hasn't asked how or where she acquired it. He's pretty sure he doesn't want to know. Not that he has any moral high ground when it comes to con jobs or petty acts of larceny, of course. Still. Camelot, calls Sam through the window as they pull up next to the Impala. Really? He's much too big for the car. His long legs all folded up like some kind of dumb origami sculpture. And the sight of his knees almost tucked under his chin makes Dean smirk hugely. It's maybe not going to be so hard to lure him back into the Impala after all. Hey, don't blame me, I didn't name the place. And the smirk is broadening into a grin now, a real grin. Because he hasn't seen Sam or spoken to him since they stopped at Denny's for lunch, for Christ's sakes, which was hours ago. And that's just not natural. You coming? He nods towards the little office with the check-in sign on the door. And Sam eases himself out of the banana mobile, like 15 clowns tumbling out of a tiny clown car or something, and stretches his two long limbs luxuriously in the light of the setting sun. Sure, he says, rolling his shoulders. Dean eyes Ruby consideringly for a moment, and then says, can you keep an eye on Cass for me? We should be okay. She's had plenty of chances to hurt Castiel if that was her game plan. She's out of the car herself now, looking at the two brothers with an expression that's hard to read, but she nods. You pulling that Sleeping Beauty act again? She asks. I swear, the guy's part sloth, and he snores. This is true, but Dean still bristles protectively for a moment, before realising he's going to sound like a 13-year-old girl if he leaps to the guy's defence. And hell, he does snore. Cool. Back in 5. It feels good, striding across the parking lot with Sam. Normal. He gives his brother a sideways glance, just to check they're still cool. No delayed big gay freakout going on. But Sam just looks like Sam. So far, so good. So where are we going, Dean? Sam asks after a moment. He'd asked the same thing that morning, and again at lunchtime, and he sounds now like he's running short of patience. Damn. Away, says Dean, evasively, not looking up at him.
We're just going away for now, okay? Get a bit of distance, regroup, come up with a game plan. Sam's mouth twitches in that slightly pained way that means he's trying hard not to snap. How's that working out for you? He says, after a moment, tightly. Dean shrugs. We're working on it. Castiel's got some ideas. He glances up at Sam, then darts his eyes away, again, suddenly self-conscious. And he'd kind of like to say something or do something to apologise for... to explain, somehow, because he knows he's kind of fucked things up here. Taken a step across some line he'd never thought about before, by hauling his pet fallen angel into the middle of their lives without so much as a by your leave. It does make things weird. And Sam's got a right to be pissy. Dean can see that. But he doesn't do touchy-feely Oprah moments, not if he can possibly help it, and Sam just needs to damn well deal. Castiel's only here because of the two of them, for fuck's sake. I mean, the guy lost everything for them. Lost his immortality and his power and his purpose and just everything. You can't just ignore something like that. You can't just leave him to flounder around out there on his own or let him go off with Ruby. And besides, Dean wants to keep him. He's not sure he likes the look on Sam's face as they walk into the check-in together. It's getting harder and harder to know what's going on in the kid's head these days. And he kind of blames Ruby for that. Dean switches his attention to the person behind the desk. It's a woman, dark-haired, early 40s, kind of hot in a saucy schoolmarm kind of way. Dean twinkles at her. Hi there, we'd like a room, he says, on autopilot. Two rooms, Sam corrects him. And the smile slips off of Dean's face and is replaced by a blush. Right. Yeah, sorry, two rooms. Says Dean. Twins, he says. Or, you know, whatever. It's only sensible, obviously, but shit. Dean isn't adjusting real well to this new dynamic, even though it's totally his own fault. He's just not great at sharing Sammy with anyone. And, okay, sure, he'd like a little privacy himself, and he can totally see that Sam would rather shack up with a hot chick than have to play gooseberry with his brother and his brother's new angel. Still, Sam is his, damn it, and he doesn't trust Ruby. He accepts the room key and listens to the lady's voice ramble on about checkout times and room service and laundromats and all that shit, and really hopes there's a minibar. They really aren't kidding about the Camelot theme. The motel room has mock Elizabethan beams made out of vinyl and stuck onto the white walls. Two spectacularly awful paintings of fantastical castles, complete with rainbows, and pouting maidens waving from battlements. One print of a knight mooning over some peasant chick with a low-cut bodice, and one sparkly unicorn picture. On velvet. The minibar, hello Bourbon, is covered with vinyl wood grain effect in a very unsuccessful attempt to resemble some kind of medieval chest or something. The beds clearly want to be four-posters, and look a bit embarrassed that the fluttery drapes bunched up around them are just nailed into the ceiling, rather than hanging down from actual posts. Castiel sits down on the edge of one bed, and fingers the threadbare curtain curiously. What is the purpose of this? He asks. It would not be an effective protection from insects, nor will it provide any extra warmth. Dean ducks his head. This is not, in fact, the most ridiculous decor he's seen, but it's definitely up there in the top 20. It's just to douche the place up, he explains. Make it look, you know, really fucking lame. Oh, says Castiel, blankly, still frowning. I see. He looks up at Dean with those wide eyes and that completely open expression, all fresh-faced and curious. And Dean completely loses his train of thought all of a sudden and has to drop the bags. Take two steps forward, grab two handfuls of t-shirt, and jerk Castiel's face close enough for a bruising kiss, because, damn, just damn. And you've got to give the guy props, because for someone who's had so little experience of the whole bam-chicka-bam-bam side of life, Castiel is a really quick learner. He doesn't hold anything back, and kisses like his life depends on it. Like it's the most amazing, most vitally urgent thing he can imagine. Like it's an act of worship or something. Like he's trying to climb right inside Dean, so he can understand him perfectly at last. And Dean's sitting astride the guy's lap now, with one hand buried in his hair and another gripping his arm hard enough to leave bruises, and he's grinding his hips down. And either that's a hex bag in the angel's pocket or, well, actually, maybe it is a hex bag.
but it's definitely not alone. Hello, happy angel parts.
Shower, he suggests, biting Castiel's ear. And the way the angel groans into Dean's jaw sounds a lot like the internationally recognised code for yes to Dean Winchester. He grins and kisses Castiel again.
Cool.
I used to watch you in the shower, gasps Castiel, leaning back against the black and white tiles with soap smeared across his collarbone, water beading his eyelashes like diamonds or tears and trickling down his chest as Dean jerks him off. And that makes Dean pause, sends a fresh shock of startled lust right through Dean and stills his hand for a moment.
You did?
Castiel manages to open his eyes again, and they're almost all pupil, lost and dark and drowned-looking. His hand tightens on Dean's waist and he licks his lips.
I watched everything you did, Dean. Every moment, every thought, every breath.
And really, that's pretty creepy, like that Sting song or something, but at the moment it's just making Dean hard.
You were like some kind of celestial stalker? A heavenly peeping Tom? You watch me, jerking off?
Yes, agrees Castiel. It wasn't... At the time, it did not mean anything. It was not licentious, you understand. I watched you eating and sleeping and laying unquiet spirits to rest. I watched everything. I did not have these hormones and impulses. I did not understand about desire. Not then. But now, I remember everything, Dean.
His eyes flutter closed again as Dean renews his attentions to Castiel's warm, hard dick.
I thought about it. About your hands when I... The first time I... Oh!
And that is so wrong, and yet also so totally fucking hot, that Dean thinks his brains may just melt right out of his ears, thinking about Castiel jerking off for the very first time and thinking about him, Dean Winchester, of all the people on the planet, not Angelina Jolie or Brad Pitt or Paris Hilton or whatever, him.
It's like the guy's imprinted on him, like some kind of fluffy little lost chick that's decided he's its mom, or, well, okay, yeah, no, not so much like that, in fact, at all, but still his, in a bone-deep way that's actually kind of scary, and is also exactly what Dean wants, and never imagined he would have. His, through and through, like family, but not.
He quickens the deft movements of his wrist and splays his other hand on Castiel's slick chest and leans in to kiss him again, all hunger and frantic need.
You're mine, aren't you? He says, and bites Castiel's bottom lip hard enough to draw blood. Always.
Yes, gasps Castiel, the words sounding wrung out of him, desperate and breathless and painfully sincere. And then he's coming in Dean's hand.
The drying-off process is a bit haphazard because there's a lot of kissing involved, and Dean is still hard, and other than trying to make sure they don't slip in a puddle and break their necks en route to the bed, he's not really all that worried about getting dry. Mostly he's concentrating on getting Castiel into the bedroom, and getting himself into Castiel. And happily they're both on the same page there, so it doesn't take very long at all before Dean is squeezing lube shakily into his hands, and just staring at the way Castiel's leaning up against the wall and looking back at him, with his curving lips still swollen with kisses, and his body all relaxed, and just, God, so fucking beautiful, that Dean can practically still see the wings. Dean bites his bottom lip as he slicks the lube over his heated skin, and tries to decide which of half a dozen smoking hot possibilities he wants to explore right now.
Come here, he says, almost growls, really, and it's thoroughly satisfying to see how quickly Castiel pushes himself up from the wall and crosses towards the bed.
And this, he reminds himself, is still the creature that had scared the crap out of him. And although he kind of misses that guy, that amazing alien being with its storm cloud strength and the electric brush of unseen feathers prickling his skin, Dean is rapidly falling for this warm, flexible, sweet-mouthed human version like a ton of bricks.
He kisses Castiel again, and arranges him carefully on the bed on all fours, and Castiel lets him.
And, yeah, sex really is ridiculous and thoroughly undignified, but damn. The sight of the angel kneeling, with his ass up in the air, and his forehead resting atop his crossed arms on the pillow, his spine one sweet white curve that Dean just wants to lick. This is the kind of hot that people would pay good money to see, and then some.
Dean pushes Castiel's thighs apart and kneels between them. Then slides the slick fingers of his right hand down the crease of the perfect ass and massages the warm lube right on into Castiel's most intimate spot. Oh, and he loves the way Castiel's back arches then and the little stifled sound he makes against the pillow. Dean keeps on working with his right hand and leans forward, sliding the fingers of his left hand up over Castiel's spine until he grips the nape of his neck and holds him still for a long moment, holds him down. The little rush of power is delicious and wicked, because this is, after all, his angel, and that brand on Dean's arm isn't going to go away anytime soon, but still, here and now, he's in charge. And that is a thrill all of its own. Then he returns his full attention to Castiel's ass, and slides one slick finger inside, marvelling again at how hot and tight it feels in there. Perfect. He keeps at it for a little while, letting his erection slide and rub against the guy's ass while his finger works inside it, enjoying the half-heard gasps from further up the bed, and then he adds another. And another. And Castiel's hips are shifting and squirming now, bucking against him with increasing urgency. "Dean," says Castiel at last, brokenly. And oh, hell yes, Dean's only human. He gets his dick lined up with Castiel's slippery entrance and pushes. "Fuck," says Dean, which isn't exactly poetic, but he should get points for accuracy, if nothing else. God. He clutches Castiel's hips for a moment and lets them both adjust. And then Castiel starts to move under him, and okay, Dean can take a hint. He gets with the program and goes for it. And it's not like this is Dean's first time around the block, because, okay, maybe he's not been with a guy until their friendly neighbourhood angel fell into his lap, but he's done everything it's possible for a person to do with a girl, including this. And other than the hairy legs and lack of boobs, it shouldn't really be all that different. It's just sex. And Dean loves sex. Hell, yes, he loves it more than pie, but it's normally something he can fall into to lose himself. Something joyous and exhilarating and just plain awesome feeling, but not something meaningful. This feels more like he's finding himself. He shouldn't be turning his brain into jelly this way. It shouldn't feel like it's something so amazing and new and important, but it really does. Because it's Castiel writhing and bucking underneath him. Castiel that's letting him in. And this is so much more than he'd expected to be given, to be trusted with, that it's blowing his mind even as it makes every nerve ending in his body light up like a Christmas tree. This is what it's all about, Dean realises. All those dumb movies and cards and bunches of roses and poems and love songs and all that sappy crap, this is what they're trying to express. This shocking, scary, wonderful sensation of knowing someone else through and through and trusting them and sticking with them and seeing them vulnerable and exposed and ridiculous and just loving them so hard that your heart could burst with it, wanting to keep them safe. It's like this whole time he's been looking at sex in 2D and somebody's just given him a pair of 3D glasses. He can't believe what he's been missing out on. "You're mine," he gasps fiercely, on the very brink of coming. "Always. You're staying right here." "Yes," says Castiel, his face muffled by the pillow, and that's it. Dean's over the edge and gone, gone, blissed out and wordless. And they're curled up in bed, naked and asleep, with Castiel spooning up behind Dean, when Uriel shows up. It's a dream, of course. Just like last time. Unlike last time, though, when Uriel shows up in his subconscious this time around, Dean is sitting in the back of the Impala, straddling Castiel and kissing him like it's an Olympic sport, and his very life depends on winning the gold for the good old US of A. Also, there is rather more nudity this time, which is unfortunate. "I told you that he liked you," says Uriel, pouring the whole ocean of scorn into his voice. Dean hears the words and registers the speaker, but it's Castiel who reacts the most swiftly. He is rolling over to one side, pushing Dean behind him and kneeling between Dean and Uriel before Dean has had time to do more than think, huh. Dean picks himself up and blinks across at the window through which Uriel is glaring. Uriel hasn't gotten any friendlier with the passage of time from the looks of things.
Now this is something that I did not ever need to see, says Uriel, regarding their nakedness with an expression of pronounced distaste.
Castiel glances down, and then an instant later he's fully dressed in the familiar old suit and trench coat, slightly dishevelled, just like he was the first time Dean set eyes on him. Neat trick. Even his hair is back to the artful, just-been-waxed chaos of bedhead that Dean remembers. More to the point, Dean himself is suddenly clad in jeans and a t-shirt, which makes him feel one hell of a lot better than right there. Not as good as a gun, maybe, but still a damn sight less vulnerable and undignified than he'd been a few seconds earlier. And then, his attention is dragged away from any Emperor's New Clothes-style worries, because Castiel is opening the door of the Impala, stepping on out, and squaring up to Uriel. Fuck. Okay, then. Dean pushes open his own door and sidles around his beloved car, keeping his eyes on Quickdraw McGraw and wondering how the hell they're supposed to play this one. Say what you came to say and leave, says Castiel, and wow, that's some pure old-school do-not-fuck-with-me Castiel right there. Dean can almost hear the thunder beneath his words, can almost taste the warm summer storm breath of power that he always associated with his angel back before, well, before recent events. It is, it must be said, pretty fucking hot. Uriel looks at Castiel with an unreadable expression, and then he looks away. You passed the test, he says. There is a pause while Dean tries to make sense of this. Castiel is standing between Dean and Uriel like some kind of human shield, so Dean cannot see the look on his face, but he swears that the guy seems to shrink in on himself at the words. The test, Castiel repeats, as if he has never heard those words before in all the millennia of his existence. Explain yourself, Uriel. Uriel cocks his head to one side, watching Castiel's face. It's all about free will, my friend. The willing sacrifice. This cycle is as old as time, and we depend on it. Can you maybe try speaking English, pal? Demands Dean. But Castiel raises a hand to shush him without looking back, which is pretty fucking annoying, but Dean decides to let it pass. He's way out of his depth right now, and he knows it. I do not understand, says Castiel slowly, and there's something in his voice that frightens Dean, something that suggests that perhaps Castiel does understand, or is beginning to, and that the immediate future may not be filled with lollipops and kittens. I think you do, says Uriel, looking at him narrowly. We walk upon the earth again through willing sacrifice. He nods over at Dean. John Winchester and then his son, they opened up the door. But that was not enough. Castiel is starting to back away from Uriel now. Dean doesn't think the guy even realizes he's moving until he bumps into the Impala. He looks, man, he looks like shit, actually. His face is like chalk, his eyes enormous. This cannot be good news. I didn't know, breathes Castiel, and his voice is barely a whisper, just a lost little wisp of sound that Dean would not have caught at all if he hadn't been staring at the guy, hadn't seen his lips shape the words. Uriel's smile is not a pleasant one. A bit above your pay grade, that kind of information. Dean waves a hand at the two of them, demanding time out and trying to wrap his head around this. Just hang on a minute, Buster. You're saying that you guys are only here on Earth at all because of my dad? Because of my deal with the Crossroads demon? Dean squeezes his eyes closed and then opens them again, and nope, still not becoming any easier to process. Silence your pet, Castiel. I did not come into your dreams to converse with the ape. Oh, yeah, and that's the Uriel that they've come to know and loathe right there, Miss Manners' sweetest student. You will treat him with respect. Dean is startled by the lash in Castiel's voice and by the renewed strength that visibly surges through the angel.
He stands up straight once more and steps forward, sticking his chin out, and damn, Castiel may have just been busted down to the mortal realm, but he still looks pretty fucking dangerous at this moment. You have just said Dean Winchester bought our passage to this plane. He paid in blood and tears and agony, and you will not insult him. Uriel shrugs. Ever the sentimental fool. Still, I should not complain, since it accords with the Lord's plan. He makes an elaborate bow in Dean's direction, a mockery of manners. Yes, Dean, we were not free to walk the dirt until you gave your life. It takes a selfless sacrifice to open up the way. Dean's head is spinning. So, what, you're here to say thank you? To tell us this whole kill the Winchesters deal was some big mistake and actually we're all just one big happy family? Not quite, says Uriel. And, oh crap, Dean really doesn't like that smile. He doesn't like the way that Castiel flinches when Uriel looks at him, not one little bit. You let us strip the grace from you and hurl you down to earth. It was not out of tedium or any selfish urge, as Gabriel's fall was. It was compassion laid you low and fit you for this role. I defied the will of God, says Castiel. He sounds numb again. His face is frighteningly blank, like he's just been smashed in the head with a rock and hasn't had the sense yet to fall down. Dean is getting a very bad feeling about this. And receive punishment, agrees Uriel. And then we watched each choice you made as you walked on the earth. You what? Interrupts Dean. What about the hex bags? We were incognito. Uriel looks at him like he's a cockroach that has just had the gall to start critiquing someone's housekeeping skills. Your hex bags do not work with us. Since Gabriel's return, we have learned much from past mistakes. Shit, says Dean, with feeling, because that's the only thing he can think of. Uriel turns his attention back to Castiel. And you have passed the test. Castiel stares. Sloth, anger, pride, gluttony, envy, avarice, lust. In truth, I do not think there is a sin I have not tasted. You have been made mortal. All of these monkeys sin. Temptation is like oxygen. They cannot live without it. Castiel shakes his head slowly. And yet I passed this test. You did. Dean's mouth tightens. He really wants to hit something. Or jump into his car, floor the gas and drive like hell, but neither of these options seem particularly viable right now, damn it. So what does that mean? He gets a prize? Nice muffin basket? A Porsche? His halo handed back? Free air miles? What? It means he gets to die, says Uriel. And the words fall into the stillness, like pebbles of polished granite dropping into a calm pool. Castiel lowers his head. Dean feels suddenly sick. Are you fucking kidding me? Splutters Dean, when he remembers how to speak. That's his prize! Death is his fucking prize! Uriel is not looking at Dean. His eyes are fixed on Castiel, and his expression is completely serious. You know it to be true. Without a heavenly sacrifice, we cannot win this war. It must be given freely, not from mindless devotion. It has to be a choice. No fucking way! No way! Dean says, feeling his heart pounding in his chest like a trapped bird. This cannot be happening. Life cannot be pulling the rug out from under his feet all over again like this, surely. It's like some kind of twisted joke at his expense. Uriel glances briefly at Dean, then returns his attention to Castiel. You've got something to lose, a reason to choose life. He puts a mocking emphasis on the last two words, and his smile is predatory. That's sweet. His expression hardens. Will you condemn the entire world to hell for your pet ape? Now just slow down, says Dean, raising both hands in a placating gesture. He steps in front of Castiel, forcing Uriel to look at him, and wonders what will happen if he punches the guy in the face. Probably nothing very good. Uriel glares at him, and for a strange moment the shadows around them seem to swell and move and chitter, and the light that pours from Uriel's face is almost blinding. Dean tries very hard, indeed, not to look cowed or impressed, but the truth is the guy is pretty damn terrifying at the best of times. And this really isn't the best of times. Not that Dean intends to let him know this.
"Your brother dooms us all," Uriel says, looking straight at Dean. "Make no mistake, Dean Winchester. When Lucifer breaks free, he wears your brother's skin. For Azazel created Sam to be the perfect host."
"Over my dead body," snaps Dean.
"In all likelihood, yes," says Uriel with a shrug. "There is nothing that you can do to keep your brother safe. In spite of all our efforts, we are not winning this war. Our might is held in check. If you would save your brother Sam, Castiel has to die."
"No, no, no, and hell no.
You cannot change the facts of life to suit your selfish whims. Castiel knows the truth. He will not be the first angel to live and die on Earth, a willing sacrifice."
He sees Dean's eyes widen and laughs.
"Sometimes you even notice them and build religions round them. But others live and die unmourned by the ungrateful hordes. It matters not. The sacrifice is vital now. It will renew our strength."
He cocks his head slightly, studying Dean's face.
"How selfish are you, really, Dean? Stop thinking with your pants."
"You're twisting it all around," says Dean desperately. "You're not, you can't have him. This isn't right." He searches Uriel's face, trying to find an answer. Take me instead.
This time, Uriel's laugh seems to rumble right up from the soles of his feet. It shakes his belly and draws tears from his eyes. "Oh, that old tune again. You really are a one-trick pony, Dean. Do get over yourself. You're no celestial sacrifice, you fool. There is no candidate in all of heaven or earth but him."
"Then find one," snaps Dean. "What about you? You do fucking chicken shit to take one for the team, Uriel?"
"I am obedient to the Lord," says Uriel calmly. "I would have slain you both. Pity is not my flaw."
Dean stares. "This is so fucked up. Can you even hear yourself? The guy shows mercy, and for this, you kick his ass out of heaven, and then tell him he's got to commit suicide. You're supposed to be the good guys. What are you, nuts?"
"Suicide is a sin," says Uriel. "He will not kill himself. There are demons aplenty who would gladly take his life."
For a moment, Dean is lost for words. "What? We just saved him from being a freaking demon sacrifice," he says at last, furiously. "And you're saying that we should have just let them rape him and carve him up into cat food? That was all part of God's plan?"
"Certainly not," Uriel looks offended. "That would have broken one more seal. His sacrifice is potent only if he chooses death. And not as part of some unholy rite to break a seal. Just death. A painful gift for God."
"I am here to tell you, you unpleasant son of a bitch, that nobody, I repeat, nobody, is going to be offering themselves up as a painful gift for God. Fuck that shit."
Dean is practically shaking with rage.
Uriel's smile is chilling.
"Dean Winchester, you are a fool, and you are far too late."
"What?"
"Just look around you, Dean. Castiel is long gone."
Dean spins on his heel, his heart suddenly in his mouth, and oh, fuck, fuck, Uriel's right. There's a terrifying, empty, Castiel-shaped space where Castiel ought to be, and in fact, he can't remember when he last heard the guy speak. He's just been assuming that Castiel was still standing at his back all of this time. Dean stares at the empty impala, and then spins back around, his right hand bunching into a fist without any conscious planning involved, and he's already swinging at Uriel, when Uriel darts forward with impossible speed and presses the heel of his hand to Dean's forehead.
"Sleep," whispers Uriel, and Dean is swept off into oblivion before he can protest.
When Dean finally wakes up, the sun has long since risen, and Castiel is nowhere to be seen.
Crumbling down my life, all these lies I put on a pedestal. love walking around. Broken down shoes, broken down vows. My same broken heart. And I know the silence is good for me. And I know how to be alone. And I know I'm trying to wait this out. And I know I gotta go. Then our eyes meet across the room, and I feel like I'm flying outside myself. I can't catch my breath. Just feel something switch. Can't explain myself. I thought I was happy until I